Last summer, in 2023, there was a cultural reclaiming going on. It started rather small. You would see it here or there, but as the summer rolled on, it began to pop up everywhere. In clothing, in housewares, in the background, up in the front and center. Celebrities embraced it, and people found such joy in the ability to reclaim it as though it had been a dirty secret that you couldn't share with others. Yes, I am talking about Barbie Pink. Some might call it bubblegum pink. Others might suggest hot pink or even the derogatory Pepto-Bismol pink. But last summer, it came into its own. And why, you might ask? Because Barbie got reclaimed. The Barbie movie that came out last summer did an amazing thing. Aside from breaking moving records, etc., it made it okay to love Barbie again. Barbie had gotten a bad rap for a while. She had been vilified by many medical and mental health experts as she seemed to be promoting an impossible body standard for women. And the fact that her hair never seemed to be out of place, always a smile on her face and mascara that never smeared, she was an impossible goal. And so many, many women declared Barbie toxic. But the Barbie movie turned that on its head by reclaiming Barbie's story. Now, not to give any story plots away, but suffice to say, the movie shows Barbie empowering women to be their most powerful selves. Today, I would like to challenge us to reclaim Thomas as well. Thomas, or Doubting Thomas, as he is often referred to, has gotten a bad rap through the centuries. He is the disciple that, one, arrives too late to see Jesus when Jesus first appears in the upper room, refuses to believe what the other disciples tell him, has to wait an entire week before Jesus comes back, and then is told by Jesus, "Blessed are those who have not seen." That is a lot to overcome. But I think there is a lot more to Thomas that we might miss with this type of reading. To begin with, this is not the first mention of Thomas. He appears earlier in the Gospel of John. After Jesus hears of Lazarus' illness and death, Jesus tells the disciples they must go to see Lazarus, although the authorities are seeking to kill Jesus at this time. Thomas states to the other disciples, "Let us go so we might also die with Jesus." Doesn't sound like words of a doubting man. Someone who's willing to give up his life for his teacher and his friend. And then from our gospel reading today, we hear of Jesus' first appearing to the disciples. Now, Peter and John have already been to see the empty tomb. Mary Magdalene has reported to the disciples what she saw, and then Jesus appears to them in this room. We are told that the disciples rejoice at seeing Jesus, but I really wonder if that's a fair description of all of them. That is a lot of information to take in a 24-hour period. These are the same people who have seen Jesus arrested, tortured, crucified, and they know he was buried in a tomb. The shock and the grief that they must have been feeling for the past few days must have been incredible. So really, did none of them ask Jesus any questions when he showed up in the room? I mean, were some of them in shock? Did perhaps some of them fear they might be losing their minds and their grasp with reality? They knew that Jesus was dead. That was a fact. And yet, here he was, standing in front of them. How could that possibly be happening? In some ways, Thomas almost sounds like the most rational one amongst them. Yes, he must have been terribly disappointed to have missed this appearance of whatever the disciples thought they saw. He probably told himself that it was their grief playing tricks on their mind. Maybe he was really worried about them and was kind of worried that they might be losing control of their imaginations in all of their grief. But instead, he just explains to them, pretty clearly, I think, that he'll wait to decide about this whole resurrection thing until he can see Jesus with his own eyes. And they all leave it at that. And then Thomas has to wait for 7 days. I can just imagine what he must have been thinking. By about day 3 or day 4, he was probably quite convinced that whatever the disciples thought they saw must have just been some sort of apparition or vision brought on by their grief and trauma that they had experienced. And then it's Sunday again. And this time, Thomas is with them. And Thomas declares what they all are thinking, "My Lord and my God." I can just hear the love, relief, gratitude, and awe that must have been in these 5 words. It must have been an amazing thing for the other disciples to watch. This is not the end of Thomas's story, though. In the non-canonical book, The Acts of Thomas, one of those books that was actually not adopted into the Bible that we use now, there is a story of what happens to Thomas. The story tells us that the disciples gather again after Jesus' ascension and discuss where each of them must go out to share the good news, sort of mapping out what their plan is and which territory each of them gets. And Thomas is told that he needs to go off to India, what we now call India. And he flatly refuses. We don't know why. Perhaps it's the distance. It would be about 40 days by boat. Perhaps it's being in such a faraway place from all that he knows. Perhaps he just doesn't want to have to work that hard to convert all those Gentiles. We don't know. But he fought it for a long time until Jesus finally appeared to him in a dream and commanded him to go. He relented and he traveled to India. The Christian churches in India carry the story from that point. They tell the story that Thomas first traveled to the Jewish colonies and made converts there, and then traveled to other towns and villages where many Christian communities were started. And these churches still celebrate today. Thomas eventually aroused the wrath of local authorities and was killed in India. His remains were eventually brought back to Italy. So if we choose to reclaim Thomas, like wearing our Barbie pink, we need to see a disciple that models a faith of belief and doubt. He shows us that faith is not a straight line, but his love for Jesus, his yearning for that connection to God, pushes him out of his comfort zone, beyond his rational explanations, to a faith-filled life of fulfilling God's call. Thomas was willing to ask questions, to rely on this rational thinking, and ultimately to trust God. Rather than seeing Thomas as the doubting one, perhaps we should reclaim him as the thinking one, and ultimately someone who put their whole trust in God. Faith is very rarely a once and done decision. Faith is a relationship that we have with God throughout our lifetime that ebbs and flows, times when we feel particularly connected to God, and other times when God might feel far away. And that fluctuating is just part of being human. Thomas is a wonderful example of this. He shows us what you do when you feel disconnected from God. You can share these doubts with your community of faith. You can share these doubts in prayer. And you wait and you trust that soon you will be reconnected again. And you will, you always will, because the disconnection is not from God. It is rather our human limitations that push us further away from God. Perhaps it's pride or fear or anger or arrogance, just a few reasons that we struggle to connect with God on a deeper level. But when we can finally put those aside or work through our human limitations, we again draw close to God once more. And God is always waiting for us patiently to reconnect once again and to declare, "My Lord and my God." Amen.